Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night here on a Wednesday. 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Do be safe out there. I haven't looked outside in 2 hours, but the reports from Twitter are not good. The roads do look bad, so if you did have to stay at work or you're going into work for a night shift, whatever it is, do be safe tonight. And if you are a plow worker or a person that puts salt down, thank you for all the work you do as well. We know how tough that can be. So no trivia tonight out at the City Sports Grill. Sad to have to cancel it, but we wanted to make sure that all of our listeners remain safe and all the people at the City Sports Grill and us. So we will be back in action next Wednesday at 7:30 for a special Valentine's Day edition of the Huddle Trivia. So also remember, tomorrow the show is sponsored by the Windjammer, as it is every night. But tomorrow we're broadcasting live from the Windjammer upstairs at the Upper Deck Pub, getting you ready for the Labatt Pond Hockey Classic. So if you're playing and you're going to sign up tomorrow at the Windjammer, you'll be seeing us. So come on and hang out. We love doing shows up there. There's a lot to get to today. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. Players who have been in the NFL are siding with Josh McDaniels. Why, and do they have a point? That's going to come up here in a few minutes. UAlbany basketball coach Will Brown will join us at 6:20. And I told you I would get him on. Will Brown, yesterday we had the discussion in the Cats Den about if he did or didn't guarantee a victory over UVM. We'll talk about the matchup tomorrow and a couple other things I want to ask him about as it relates to UVM and to his program at Albany as well. Big game tomorrow. We'll have it for you here. 6:30 for the pregame show on 101.3 ESPN. The game will be broadcast on television nationally on ESPNU. So Will Brown will join us at 6:20. And then a little more clarity on the Malcolm Butler situation. We'll get into that as well as the show goes on. But again, you are going to want to text in. This is a strong story to react to. And my first take is the NFL needs to look at changing the way the rules are as far as looking for new coach hires. And I understand the spirit of the rule. You don't want, and Bill Polian, let's let Bill Polian say it best. Bill Polian was on Golic and Wingo today, and he talked about why he thinks the rule does not need to be changed here. Because here's what the rule is. You cannot agree to become a new coach. You cannot agree to a new job while your team is still playing in the playoffs. So if your team went 3-13 in your season's over on January 1st, you can sign on right after the season's over or right after you've been let go or whatever to be a new coach. However, if you play deep into the playoffs, you have to wait until your season is over in order to sign on the dotted line and take over. And the thought process is this, as Bill Polian, former NFL executive and former NFL GM, told Golic and Wingo today.
Well, they could change the rule. I don't think the rule needs changing. I mean, okay. This is all about Josh McDaniels. It's not about the Colts. It's not about the rule. He decided not to take a job that he basically had told him he was going to take. They had actually scheduled the press conference. I think everybody knows that.
Yeah.
So there's no rule that can stop that. And I think on balance, the rule is a good rule. The idea is you don't want to distract the people who are involved in the Super Bowl or involved in the playoffs.
I disagree. I think the rule needs to be changed. And he says the idea of the rule is so that you don't distract the coaches and teams that are going through the playoffs and ultimately to the Super Bowl. I like Bill Polian, but that is such a cop-out response, okay? Well, we don't want to distract the teams that are still playing. Well, when coaches know they're leaving, you don't think they're already distracted? They're not looking for new houses in new places. They're not looking for new schools for their kids. They're not looking for assistants to come and join them. They're not going through their Rolodex saying, hey, when I take this job, would you like to come with me? They're not, I'm sure at some point somewhere a coach who knew he was leaving did a little bit to study up on his new team in addition to work with his old team. So don't tell me that these coaches aren't already distracted by the maybe they're going to sell their current house that they live in their current city. They're going to pull their kid out of that current school. They're going to talk about, okay, am I going to move in February to the new city, and my wife and kids are going to stay in the old city and then come join me in the summer when the school year is over? This is what happens in real life when you're about to move. These coaches are already distracted. So if the spirit of the rule is to keep coaches from being distracted, I'm telling you, they're already distracted. They are already distracted because of the thought of moving. Maybe they want to move and their wife doesn't, and they're talking about that too. And they're having, you know, family, not issues, but family discussions about it. This is how life goes. They're already distracted. And look, I don't know what the best course of action is, but I just know this. What happened to the Colts yesterday, being left at the altar by Josh McDaniels, is terrible. It's embarrassing for them. It's embarrassing for the league. It's a poor look on McDaniels. It reflects poorly on the Patriots and Kraft and Belichick. There's two things that can be done here. Either let them sign on the dotted line and then not start their new responsibilities until after their season is over, which is what we see in college sometimes. Guys sign in college. Guys take new coaching jobs in college all the time. Their season ends, they take college jobs. Usually they don't coach the bowl game, but sometimes they do. Scott Frost this year at Central Florida, he took the job at Nebraska. He coached Central Florida through the bowl game, and they won and completed a perfect season. Scott Frost did it at Division I high-level football. Let Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia, whoever, sign on the dotted line on January 7th if they want to. And then some kind of institutional policy has to be put in place that says, okay, you've signed the contract, that's great. Now all your attention, all your work needs to go on to your current team. If the rule is already, if we're already anticipating because of the rule that we're trying to keep you from being distracted, then let's just sign it and then have you act the same way that you act currently under the rule. If you can trust them to not be distracted now, then trust them to not be distracted after signing the paperwork. Trust that they'll put all of their energy into their current job. That's one way you can do it. The other way is you can push the deadline for everybody until after the Super Bowl and say, look, Super Bowl's February 4th this year. No one can do interviews until at least February 5th. And then everybody gets between a month and a few weeks late head start. But maybe that's okay. We had a texter text in earlier that said, think about how much fun that would be when you get right after the season ends, all these coaches getting hired. That's possible. I don't know that that's the best way, but I know that anything is better than this, where you have gentlemen's agreements and handshakes and behind-the-scenes text messages and stuff that say, okay, I'm coming, and then 3 weeks later, you back out. I know that there's another way better than that. Maybe we all do this later. Maybe we don't do it for anybody until the season ends. Or maybe we just say sign it and then go to work for your current team the same way that Scott Frost did for Central Florida before he took the job at Nebraska. It just doesn't seem right. Frank in Crown Point says, the Colts jumped the gun by signing assistants too early. They signed assistants too early based on the fact that McDaniels was coming. McDaniels sought out these assistants. McDaniels sought out the defensive coordinator. I mean, McDaniels did this. This is about McDaniels. The league, in my mind, needs a better rule. But this is about McDaniels doing a shady thing. And don't sell me that the family aspect is a big deal here. I mean, Mike Reese of ESPN, he covers this team as close as anybody. He said this on another reason why McDaniels stayed, and I'm not buying it.
And the second part of this that appealed to Josh McDaniels was when the Patriots sort of sold him on the idea that his kids, who are 12, 10, 6, and 3, would have stability because they were willing to make a long-term commitment to him that in this coaching profession, it's hard to have your kids in the same school system for their entire youth, but they were willing to make a commitment to him from a time frame perspective that was possible.
Look, and that's true, okay? I'm not naive to this idea. I don't have kids, but I'm not naive to this idea that you would like your kids to grow up in the same place and have the same friends and have, you know, come through the same school system and have comfort. And he's got a 12-year-old who, you know, is a few years removed from high school. Like, you would like that stuff to be the case. I get that. But you've been with your wife for a while now. Haven't you had this conversation before? Haven't you sat down and said, okay, here's the places we could go. Here's the places we would like to go. Here's the places that we would never go. You should have been prepared for this, especially you're in a field where the jobs turn over constantly. He could have been fired at any point. He could have been sought after at any point. And he was going to need other places on his mind. If you don't want to leave because of the family, then go coach local high school if that's what matters to you. Go coach at the local high school that they'll come through if that's what matters to you. What McDaniels did was shady. It makes him look like a chump. And I would not hire him for a long time if I'm another organization. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. And you know what? It isn't just McDaniels. Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft are at fault also. They are at fault also here because, you know, hey, McDaniels, we just told you, he knew all these concerns already. So the fact that these new things are concerns to him now, that's ridiculous. But as far as Belichick goes, if Belichick and Kraft valued McDaniels so much and they wanted him to stay so badly, why did they wait until now to do this? Why didn't they lock him up or try to lock him up at the end of the regular season? Why didn't they try to lock him up during the first round bye? Why didn't they do that? Why didn't they make it, you know, what, it took him getting another offer to get his full worth from his current employer? And if that's the case, is that the kind of guys that I want to stay with? They could have done this weeks ago, but now they've put me in a position to look bad. Do I want to keep working for that? Now, because you throw in all the other family stuff, I guess maybe I would say yes, but I don't know that I'm crazy about that dynamic either. These guys could have shared this with me weeks ago. They could have made me new offers. They always say, you know, the best way to get a better standing at your current job is to get another job offer and get leverage. Well, the Patriots have known for 3 weeks that McDaniels was coveted by the Colts, and they knew the reports were out that McDaniels was going to take the job, and they waited until now to come up with this? That's ridiculous on their part. I really just feel bad for his assistants. I feel really bad for his assistants who, as we said, now, look, his assistants uprooted their family. They believed in his message. They believed in going to work with McDaniels. And they're not going to get fired. The Colts have said they're going to honor their contracts, and that's fine. They have a job, yes, which is better than a lot of less fortunate people in this country. I get that. But now a new head coach is going to come in who's got coordinators and assistants that aren't tied to him. What do you think their job security is? So now these guys have left what were stable positions for now unstable positions. I feel bad for them as to what McDaniels did for them. Shame on Kraft and Belichick for waiting until the last second. They knew these things. They knew this was possible weeks ago when they waited and waited and waited to sweeten the pot for McDaniels. Shame on them. Also, shame on Belichick for not having already taught McDaniels everything he needs to know. It's not his job to mentor every coach on his staff, but it is his job to mentor his top lieutenants who he knows have head coaching aspirations. So we hear from Mike Reese that Belichick's going to open his world to McDaniels and teach him all there is to know, and that's a big selling point to McDaniels. Why wasn't that already done? Shame on them for waiting to tell McDaniels what his value is to them. Shame on them for shame on Belichick for not already having taught McDaniels everything. Shame on McDaniels for doing this to potential assistants and doing this to the Colts. Shame on everybody all around. And you know what really kind of rubs me the wrong way is that McDaniels, he just comes off not only like a chump, he comes off looking like a snake. And listen to what Seth Wickersham said today on the Dan Le Batard Show about it.
You know, I'm not sure that Josh feels that guilty about this decision. I mean, obviously he left a lot of coaches hanging, and I'm not sure that, like, he feels that guilty about it. I think that he feels like he did what was best for himself.
Seth Wickersham wrote the article on the Patriots and their dysfunction or their tension in their locker room, you know, earlier in the year, something that came out right before the end of the regular season or right before the first playoff game, one of those two. He's in tune with what's going on in New England. And to say that McDaniels doesn't feel guilty, it just shows him in a new light, and it's a negative light. And the stories keep coming out. Now, this one goes all the way back to Denver, but there was a player who came out and said this on Twitter today, and the name escapes me, but he goes, "For context, Josh McDaniels was hired by the Broncos in 2009. I was on the roster and home for the offseason. My parents' landline got a voicemail from the Broncos saying that I'd been cut. I called McDaniels for an explanation. His assistant said he'd call me back. He never did." He never called him back. So he was immature. He didn't know how to handle things in Denver. And he doesn't appear to have grown at all in the last decade personally. Now, he is a good coach. He's a damn good offensive coordinator. And I think it's great for the Patriots that he's staying. That said, he is at massive fault in this thing, and he's got others that are in on it with him also in Kraft and Belichick. Frank in Crown Point goes, "Agree on bad thing by Josh as a handshake deal used to be good enough." So he's saying that a man's word used to count. It's Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. The big game is tomorrow. Catamounts, unblemished in the America East. They're 9-0 right now. They're 19-5 overall. They'll take on their biggest test of the season, a road game at rival Albany. They'll do it tomorrow. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:30. The man on the sideline for the Great Danes, and he's foiled a lot of UVM fans' big plans over the last few years. Will Brown, he's going to join us next on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN.
Go. It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It is a Wednesday. We go up until 7 o'clock today, but we're all pumped already for tomorrow's big showdown. Thursday night in Albany, it will be the Catamounts on the road against their arch rival, the Great Danes. We'll have the coverage for you then at 6:30, and the game will be nationally televised on ESPNU. Let's go out to the phone line now and find ourselves Will Brown, head coach of the Great Danes, and a guy I know very well from my time in Albany. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
It's good. Good to talk to you again, Coach. You taking care of everybody down there in Albany at my old station? You treating Roger and the guys well?
Trying to. It's a difficult task, as you're well aware.
That's right. Hey, before we talk basketball, I got to ask you this. We've been so consumed today with Patriot news, and Josh McDaniels took the Colts job and then backed out of it the last second. Have you seen that in the college basketball world? How often does this happen?
Well, you know, on the basketball side, not too much. I think, maybe 2 years ago, was it, when Chris Beard took the job at UNLV, stayed there for a week and left,
yeah,
and took the job at Texas Tech. So I think he was actually named coach and on the job for a couple of days, and then had second thoughts and took the Texas Tech job. But, you know, I'll tell you what, I was surprised when I saw that. And when I saw it, initially I'm thinking, is Belichick stepping down because, you know, does he know something that nobody else knows? And, you know, apparently I guess they sweetened the deal for him to stay in New England. And I'm sure he'll be considered for that job at some point, I would imagine. It's not too often you get an opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL.
How much does that hurt a guy's reputation around coaching circles?
Well, you know, I think it hurts it a little, especially from a perception standpoint. But let's face it, you know, administrations, they want to win. I think it might hurt Josh McDaniels initially, but there's going to be a team out there that and an owner that's really going to want to win. And if they feel he's the guy that can make it happen, I'm sure he'll have other opportunities down the road. Obviously, he's very gifted as an offensive coordinator. But then again, when you have Tom Brady and Gronk and guys like that, you know, that has to help.
Well, let's move our attention to basketball again. The big showdown tomorrow. The Catamounts come into your place. They're 19-5. They're unbeaten in the conference. You guys are 18-7, and you're 12-1 at home. So something's got to give here. What do you expect the environment to be like tomorrow at CEFQ Arena?
Well, it looks like we're about to get 2 feet of snow here, but hopefully it ends by this evening. And I think we'll have a good crowd, nationally televised game. We have a very good opponent coming into the CEFQ Arena who's playing outstanding basketball. So, you know, we know our hands are full. You know, we've played some meaningful games against Vermont over the years. So I think our fan base and the local community, it's a game that they want to see. So, you know, I expect a really good crowd, a good basketball environment, and I know my guys in particular are excited about playing, and I'm sure the Vermont kids are as well.
You know, I'll paraphrase your words, but up here on January 24th after the first meeting, you said, hey, maybe I'm pigheaded or stubborn, but I think we're going to get them in the CEFQ Arena. I had somebody tell me that that meant you guaranteed a victory, and I defended you. Did you guarantee victory over Vermont a couple of weeks ago?
No, definitely didn't guarantee victory over Vermont. Too much respect for them. If I'm not mistaken, I believe what I said, anybody that listened post-game in particular,
yeah.
I said that at most, Vermont would lose one game, and I think we're the only team that has a chance to beat them because we will not be intimidated. We fully expected to go into Patrick Gymnasium and compete at a high level and have a chance to win. I think so many teams up in that environment are beat before they get on the bus. And I said the same thing going into the championship game last year. We felt that we can go there and win. And I thought for 38.5 minutes, you know, we imposed our will on them. And then in the last minute and a half, we didn't finish the job. Tremendous, you know, credit to Vermont for getting it done and winning the game. So, you know, my thing is they're really good. They've been on a great run, but they're not going to walk into the CEFQ Arena against a team that's going to be intimidated. They're going to get tremendous amount of resistance from us, but I would never guarantee a victory. You know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, especially when I said after we lost up there, hey, you know, they're going to win the league. And I've said it multiple times in multiple interviews, at most, in my opinion, they were going to lose one game in league play. And I thought we were the only team capable of potentially beating them. So, you know, definitely, you know, did not guarantee a victory, would not do it, and have been very impressed by everything that I've seen from Vermont. And I think John and his staff are doing an outstanding job. And, you know, we just hope that we can slow them down a little bit tomorrow night and put ourselves in a position the last couple of minutes of the game to have a chance to win.
UAlbany men's basketball coach Will Brown with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night, getting ready for the Catamounts to go to Albany tomorrow. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:30. What do you see from this Vermont team without Anthony Lamb? Because people here were worried, or maybe not worried, but nervous that the team was going to drop some games in conference without arguably their best player, or at least their best scorer. How has this team maintained being so good without Lamb?
Yeah, I think they've been very consistent. They really do a good job of defending and rebounding every night, whether it's in Patrick Gymnasium or on the road. And I think they have tremendous balance. Urquhart, if I pronounce his name right, would probably start on just about every other team in the league. And he has started at Vermont prior to this year. And it's a veteran team. They're not playing many guys off their bench. They're playing that starting five a ton of minutes. But when they do go to their bench, you have a guy like Cam Ward, who's a senior, who's been through the battles, who's experienced. You know, I've said this a bunch. People are asking me about Vermont in different interviews. What I like so much about them is they do not beat themselves. They're very unselfish. They play together on both ends of the floor. The kids obviously know their roles. They embrace their roles. They don't waver from their individual roles, and they don't waver from their game plan. They won't beat themselves, so you have to go out there and beat them, which has proven to be a tough task. So, and it's a veteran team. That's what people forget. There's no young guys playing. Henson's a fifth-year senior. Urquhart is a senior. Ernie Duncan is a fourth-year junior. Everett Duncan's a third-year sophomore. And Bell Haynes is a senior. Ward off the bench, first guard off the bench, is a senior. That's a veteran team that's used to winning, that's battle-tested. And, the difference with the Vermont team since John has taken over, as coach, is I think on the offensive side of the ball, he gives them more freedom to play than the coach before him, where everything was really structured and flex offense and different things like that. Now you've got, a guy like Bell Haynes, I think, has a lot more freedom in their system. And it's more of a ball screen based system with great spacing. And, obviously they have good players as well.
Coach, I'll get you out of here on two more questions. Up here, we saw UVM had to have the struggles in scheduling, just trying to get teams willing to play them. They ultimately play Kentucky and Marquette. You guys faced that for a long time, too. Teams just don't want to play you. You had a good run this year with Louisville, almost beat them, almost beat Memphis. But how tough is it for really good established mid-major programs to schedule games?
Yeah, scheduling's tough. We deal with it, and Albany's, it's pretty easy to get to. Vermont's a little tougher to get to than Albany, but, everybody nowadays with scheduling, they're trying to schedule wins for the most part. And at the Division I level, it's hard. There's no guaranteed wins. I think the biggest thing with the schedule is trying to find balance. And the hard thing with Vermont, if you play a two-year or a four-year series, you're figuring that they're going to be good for that duration of the series. And, so I know it was tough for John to get home games in particular. Again, you're only as good as your last year, and you have to win in this business. And I think a lot of coaches with scheduling are afraid to schedule Vermont and maybe to a little bit lesser of extent to Albany's just because they don't think they're going to win those games. So I understand it. I get it. Might not like it. And then even, the games that we can get, I don't know if John would feel a little bit differently than me. You can only play so many of those games that are considered up games because you don't want to risk losing all those games. Not that that would happen, but you don't want to lose them because you want to have some confidence going into conference play. So balance is very important as far as, teams that, we think are up games, teams that we think are similar to us. And then you always want to try to find a game or two maybe that you think that you're going to win if you play good, solid basketball. I thought Vermont's schedule was very challenging. Even the games that they lost, tight games against good teams. So it's probably my toughest job. I don't know if John does the scheduling himself, but I handle all of our scheduling at Albany. A lot of programs have assistants do it, and then they communicate with the head coach. I just try to eliminate as many people involved in the process, handle it myself, so this way if anything goes wrong, I can just look in the mirror.
Coach, we'll get you out of here on this. Another thing that I've been wondering about, people up here, at least a lot of the fans, they've called in and they said this team's had a really good 2 years and they're on the verge of getting a new arena. They should jump ship and move up to a bigger conference. And I tell them, whoa, let's enjoy the success that we've got. You guys recently won 3 consecutive America East championships, and I don't remember anybody at home saying you Albany needs to jump conferences, but did you ever get that kind of pressure, people saying, hey, you've won this league a little bit, let's move up?
No, not really. I think you also need to be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I agree.
You embrace all that success. You want to keep it going. You know, my response to those people would be, well, what league is a good fit for you? You know, I think anybody that would like to, from Vermont, that wants them to move up a league, you know, throw in the logistics of it. What conference, what type of travel, you know, how much can you increase your budget? There's a lot that goes into it than just saying, hey, you know, we've dominated the last 2 years. Let's go play in the Atlantic 10. You know, does the Atlantic 10 want you? Can you afford to do it? Does it make sense? And I don't know what, you know, their mission is up there, where they want to be, where they see themselves. But I do know that they've had an awful lot of success in the America East Conference. I think the America East Conference has been good for them. I know it's a good league for the University at Albany. It's a good fit. You know, I just think you got to really think things through. It's not just about playing better teams. You know, how does it benefit you? How does it potentially hurt you? Because all that success you're experiencing now could be gone very quickly if you make, you know, maybe the not, you don't, you make maybe not the most informed decision to make a move. And you know, but the America East is a good conference. It continues to get better, and I hope Vermont stays, because you know, I think their program helps make our program better. You know, and it's funny, it goes in cycles. We had a stretch where we had beaten them, I think, like six times in a row, and now you know, they've beaten us, I believe, four times in a row. And so you know, I think it's a good healthy rivalry. I think we want to beat each other up for 2 hours, and I think when the game's over, win, lose, or draw, there's a genuine respect between programs. And you know, we've got to try to find a way to score one more point than Vermont tomorrow night. Defense has not been an issue for us. I think last year we were solid defensively all three games. We were up at the half all three games, just couldn't finish. And you know, the game up there, they out-toughed us in the first half. We dug ourselves a hole, but with 6 minutes to go, we're tied, and we have plenty of opportunities down the stretch, but we didn't get it done. So got to score some points tomorrow night. If we can do that, I think we'll be in good shape. But Vermont's on a tremendous run, and nothing but respect for their program.
Will Brown, UAlbany men's basketball coach, Catamounts head to Albany tomorrow night. We'll have the coverage for you starting at 6:30. Coach Brown, no one here is going to wish you good luck. I'll wish you good luck and remind you that the days you guys play are the toughest days of the year for me locally, because I'm so invested in both programs. So I wish you good luck.
Well, I appreciate that greatly, and I really do enjoy our trips to Burlington, Vermont. I think it's a wonderful state and a tremendous city, so you know, it's always a lot of fun. So we'll welcome them down here with open arms.
Appreciate it, Will Brown, again on Champlain Valley Game. The game is tomorrow at 6:30 with the pregame show. We'll be doing the broadcast, the Huddle 4-6 in Champlain Valley Game Night, 6 to 6:30 from the Windjammer and the Upper Deck Pub. We will be upstairs at the Windjammer. So we'll enjoy that, and then we'll enjoy a great game. It's the most meaningful game of the conference schedule to the people at Albany. It's the most meaningful game of the conference schedule to the people up here, and we look forward to it every year. Again, it gets me conflicted. I like Will Brown. I've known Will Brown for a while. I've gotten to speak to Will Brown and interview Will Brown a bunch of times, but I know how good this UVM team is. And really, the stuff that was amazing, and we'll react to some of what Will had to say on the Huddle tomorrow in preparation for the game, but the stuff about joining conferences, I have said repeatedly that you shouldn't just do it. And I, you know, I pointed to the impact on other programs at the university, but also he's right. Think about how, you know, travel budgets, how much are you willing to spend on your recruiting budget? And do you have that money, and are you ready to make that commitment? There's more light on that, more light on the scheduling. And the thing I really liked what he said about UVM now is that the freedom that the offense plays with under John Becker, that was an angle I hadn't heard before, and because I wasn't here prior to Coach Becker. But if you talk about an offense under Mike Lonergan that was structured, and it was, hey, I'm going to call a play, and you're going to look over every single time, this is a more fun brand of basketball, and it's more fun to get players that can play to that style. So thanks to Will Brown for being with us. When we come back, we'll get more into Josh McDaniels. He left. Bill Belichick did this to the New York Jets. Why the situations are different. That's next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Go. It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN, going up until 7 o'clock, and then at 7:30, it's NHL hockey action as the Bruins and the unbeatable Bruins, they take on the New York Rangers. So look forward to that one at 7:30. Celtics took a tough one on the chin last night, losing in Toronto to the Raptors. They're back on the air tomorrow night. They'll take on Washington. Remember listening to them play on Christmas Day and the Celtics beating Washington at the very end, right? Beating Washington? I don't even remember at this point, but I remember listening to it on my way home. I think they lost. Washington was out-rebounding them like crazy at the very end. So if you want to get in, 802-655-6672. Josh McDaniels held the Colts head coaching job for 9 hours, and people have said all day, oh, like teacher, like student. Why? Well, because Bill Belichick, Brady, he left. He was the Jets coach for 24 hours, and then he left, and he became a Patriot. So he's learned from the best at how to swindle himself out of a job. Here is why those two situations are not the same. On the surface, they appear to be the same because coordinator gets a head coaching job, and then coordinator backs out of said head coaching job after accepting. Here's the difference. If you watched the 30 for 30 on, it was called The Two Bills, and it came out last Thursday, and it was about Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells and their relationship. You learned finally what exactly transpired and why Belichick left that Jets head coaching job. And the answer was because of organizational turmoil. There was no owner at that point. The Jets were in the process of being sold. They did not have a new owner. So Belichick, if he had stayed on as the head coach of the Jets, he was going to be playing or coaching, rather, for an owner that did not hire him, an owner that did not agree to the coach-in-waiting job. I have more respect for Belichick after really learning that. And look, maybe I knew it at the time. At the time, I was only 10 years old, and I didn't care about what was happening with the New York Jets. I mean, I lived in New York. I had just moved to New York at the time when Belichick did that in whatever it was, 99, 2000. I mean, I had no interest in what was happening to the Jets. So really, when I was watching that 30 for 30, this was triggering my memory for the first time. So I can understand why Belichick didn't want to be in New York at that time, because he was going to be coaching for an organization that did not hire him and had no loyalty to him. I can understand that wholeheartedly. McDaniels was going to a place where they rolled out the red carpet for him, where they put it all over their Twitter account, all over their social media. They hired his assistants coming in. They had the news conference scheduled. This is different. What Belichick did, you know, 20 years ago, it looks bad in retrospect, and it looked bad at the time, but you get it now. Like, I understand it now. It looked bad at the time. It doesn't look so bad in retrospect, I mean to say. I understand. You know, we always hear about the lame duck head coach, the guy who's playing for the general manager who didn't hire him. He's not that guy's guy. That's what Belichick would have been in New York. McDaniels was hand-picked by Indy. He was cherry-picked out by Indy. They're not even close to the same thing. What McDaniels did yesterday, 25 hours ago, 23 hours ago rather, 7:30, 7:45 last night, is way worse than what Bill Belichick did to the New York Jets. So don't let anybody tell you that they're the same thing. Yeah, they're the same result. Guy leaves a job he had previously accepted, but the extra factors, the extracurriculars around the situation, they're far, far different. At Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com, again, going up until 7 o'clock. This one was fascinating to me. Robert Kraft didn't even know that Malcolm Butler wasn't going to play in the Super Bowl. And I have to amend something that I said yesterday. I said that if Malcolm Butler did something wrong, if he didn't, we still don't know, but big if he did something wrong, if there was marijuana, if there was Miss Curfew, if there was anything, I said, you know what? He deserves to be made an example of. He deserves to be treated that way, and this is what the Patriots have always done. This is what the Patriots have done, and we don't question it when it works and when the Patriots win. We don't question when they get rid of a guy. We don't think so because, oh, and Bill, we trust. But I got to amend my statement, I said. This was re-pointed out to me today by Albert Breer, the Monday Morning Quarterback, that no matter what Butler may have done, if he did something, listen to what Bill Belichick has let slide before. 2 years ago, Chandler Jones, remember this? Defensive end, bizarrely knelt shirtless in the parking lot of the Foxborough Police Department. And, oh, I believe there was drug implications in that whole thing. This was during the team's playoff bye weekend. He blamed it a bad reaction to medication and wound up starting days later. So Malcolm Butler may have missed curfew, but Chandler Jones kneels shirtless in the parking lot of a police department and plays days later. So Bill Belichick, I said yesterday, this is what the Patriots do. This is not what the Patriots do. The Patriots have selectively chosen discipline in their past. How about this one? Wes Welker sat out one series in a playoff game for making foot fetish jokes about Jets coach Rex Ryan, but led the team in catches that day. So this, if Bill Belichick was punishing Malcolm Butler, it was a far more extreme punishment than we have seen before out of the Patriots and out of Belichick. And in that case, I would not justify it. So it leads me to believe that Butler did nothing wrong, that this was a football move, and Belichick, in my mind, and we can look at it because of the result and say he made a miscalculation, he made a mistake. Malcolm Butler had played 98% of the snaps this season. He had not missed a defensive snap since November 19th. He hadn't missed a defensive snap since November 19th. I'm leaning towards believing this is about football, not about discipline. But if it's about football, it is not the right call. It wasn't the right call. And Belichick's not going to speak for two more months. He doesn't have to speak to the media until we get closer to the draft. Maybe the combine, but he's not really doesn't have to speak until the draft. So, and it does stink that Butler's got these questions and allegations out, because if he did nothing wrong, it's something that could hurt his free agent chances, because he's not coming back to New England. You know he's not coming back to New England. Jason, our buddy Jason, he says, and remember the Patriots signed Michael Floyd, and he played in the Super Bowl just, you know, weeks after being involved in drunk driving, and we ended up going to jail in Arizona. We also saw the Pats sign Kenny Britt this year, who had been arrested multiple times. I want to say it was like seven altercations with law enforcement or seven run-ins with law enforcement. So Belichick has dealt with some low character issues. Maybe not low character guys, but low character issues, and allowed guys to still play. Leads me to believe that it was football related for Butler, even though it ends up being the wrong call. All right, that'll do it for us here today on Champlain Valley Game Night. Tons to digest on Josh McDaniels. Tons to digest as we get ready for UVM and UAlbany tomorrow. Thanks to Zach Cox and Buster Olney for joining us in the huddle. Thank you to Will Brown, Albany basketball coach, for joining us here in Champlain Valley Game Night. Bruins hockey is coming up in one half hour. They're taking on the Rangers at 7:30. We'll see you tomorrow from the Windjammer, 101.3 ESPN.